Former NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Astronaut, explorer, Marine General, and pilot Charles Bolden came to his alma mater, the University of Southern California, to participate in that summit. You'll hear our conversation about his time as leader of the space agency and where he thinks we need to go next. I've got a surprise for Bruce Betts in this week's What's Up segment, and more great prizes for the winner of a new space trivia contest. It has been a busy week around the solar system. Planetary Society senior editor Emily Lakdawalla gets us underway with what is nearly a grand tour of that system and beyond. Emily, a whole bunch of topics to try and get through in a short amount of time this week. Some of these, most of these, in fact, are on the Planetary Society website, planetary.org. Let's start with a little news brief from Jason Davis, our colleague, the digital editor at the Society, that he published on December 10th. And it's about OSIRIS-REx not just having arrived now at Bennu, but making terrific discoveries already.
Yes, apparently with its spectrometers, the signal of hydrated minerals is being just blasting out loud and clear from the surface of the asteroid. What that means is minerals with water in their crystal structures. It isn't exactly liquid water flowing across the surface of the asteroid, but it's good news if you want to do in situ resource utilization, go mining asteroids and getting water for fuel.
There's more in Jason's blog post, including some facts and figures about this little rock, which really isn't so little. He lists that the OSIRIS-REx team has determined the mass is 7.34 times 10 to the 10th kilograms, which I find very entertaining and fascinating. On to another explorer within the solar system. You wrote on December 7th about Chang'e 4.
Yes, Chang'e 4 launched successfully. It should already have done almost all of its orbital maneuvers and will be entering orbit very soon at the moon. It'll orbit the moon a few times before setting down on the far side in the Von Karman crater. It's going to have a pretty steep descent down to the surface because the far side is a little more rugged than the near side. So everybody cross your fingers for the success of the Chang'e 4 landing in early 2019.
Voyager 2, you wrote about it on December 10th, and I'll bet that most of our audience has heard by now that it has joined its twin out there in, well, is it interstellar space?
It depends on what you mean by interstellar space, whether it's left the solar system or not. So what it has done is it's left the heliosphere behind. It doesn't feel the solar wind from our sun anymore. It traveled beyond what's called the heliopause. So now the plasma and the fields that it's sensing are all in interstellar space. They're the galactic radiation. And that's really great because Voyager 2 has a working plasma instrument. The similar one on Voyager 1 failed in 1980. So there's new science happening on Voyager 2 out there. Now, of course, both Voyagers will still take another few hundred years to get beyond the gravitational influence of the sun, to get beyond the Oort cloud. But as far as fields and particles go, they have left the solar system and are experiencing the galaxy directly.
Travel on, Voyagers, and I read that the team is still hoping that at least one of them will remain active through 2027. Pretty amazing. Finally, something that only came up this morning as we speak, Emily, you posted on December 11th another one of your terrific updates on Curiosity, the Mars Science Laboratory rover. How's it doing?
It's been about 3 months since my last update, and the rover actually spent about 6 weeks of that dealing with a major computer problem. It fortunately didn't threaten the health of the rover, but they did have to swap computers. Fortunately, the rover does have a backup computer. But now they're back in business and are looking around for a final drill site on top of Vera Rubin Ridge in some very hard red-colored rocks. And if they manage to succeed with that, or even if they don't, they're going to be driving beyond the ridge within the next couple months, probably.
All right, Emily, thank you very much for this quick tour of the solar system and beyond in this update, and we'll talk to you again soon.
I just hope that all these missions just slow down a little bit for the next few weeks. I want to enjoy my holidays.
Yes, happy holidays to you and everybody else. That's Emily. She is the senior editor for the Planetary Society, which now includes her leadership of the Planetary Report. our magazine that goes on paper to members but is now accessible to anybody out there. You can find it at planetary.org. And she's our planetary evangelist, your planetary evangelist too. This was the third year I was invited to attend the National Space Society's Space Settlement Summit. The NSS mission is creation of a spacefaring society, including the creation of human communities in space. The summit attracts many of the leading thinkers and actors in humanity's progress toward space settlement. So it's not surprising that the recently retired NASA administrator gave a lunchtime keynote and stayed to hear several presentations. Charles Bolden, he'll ask you to call him Charlie, led the space agency for the 8 years of Barack Obama's administration. But his career with NASA started long before, and that followed his nearly 35 years as a Marine Corps pilot, who rose to the rank of Major General. He flew on 4 space shuttle missions, 2 as pilot and 2 as commander. Nowadays, he enjoys piloting his motorcycle, among other things. We sat down shortly before his presentation. General Bolden, it is truly an honor to be able to catch you. We were sitting next to each other here for this presentation.
We are, as a matter of fact, both of us trying to learn a little bit more about settlements, and I found the conversation so far this morning quite interesting.
One of the messages that we heard is that, I mean, you got a ton of engineers here, a few scientists, but there was a presenter up front saying, how many biologists do we have? How many people who know how to run a hotel or get consumables to people who need them? Not many. We don't have them in part of this community. Is that something that you see as something that we're going to have to deal with?
It is indeed. And in fact, if you look back to the beginning of my time as the NASA administrator with President Obama, we actually recognized that, and we stood up an organization called the Space Technology Mission Directorate, and their focus was supposed to be finding new technologies both inside NASA that we could hand off to the private sector, but equally important, go out and beat the hinterlands for ideas that would be useful to us as we tried to go beyond low Earth orbit. We always think we have a corner on the market on smarts, and one of the things that one of my mantras was always, we don't know everything and we don't have the corner of the market. I think the topics that were talked about this morning are very important. If you look at, for example, what we're trying to do right now as NASA, I say we, I'm not a we anymore except in spirit. But what NASA's trying to do right now with their international partners is build a gateway in lunar orbit. I'm not sure how many people understand its purpose. Its purpose is to provide a platform from which anybody, international partners, entrepreneurs, commercial businesses, can go and begin their preparation for sending something to the lunar surface. I think we're going to have the same thing when we get to Mars. We're going to have an orbiting platform so that there's a station, if you will. If we can think about, we're sitting here on the campus of the University of Southern California, my alma mater, and we look right across the street at the metro stop, imagine that's the gateway, or it's a Martian gateway, if you will. People come here, students, professors, everybody, they get off. Some of them come to the university. Some of them go over to the museum. Some just go to the park to smell the roses.
It's Union Station or Grand Central.
Union Station or Grand Central, and it's the place where people can go to the surface of whatever body we happen to be operating in. It's the critical importance of it is it allows us to have a transportation vehicle that never goes back into a gravity well. Buzz Aldrin calls it a cycler. Back in the old days, the beginning of the shuttle era, when we had a space transportation system, it was called an orbital maneuvering vehicle or an orbital transfer vehicle. That was not many people other than you and me remember the original STS days, but that was the third prong of the three-prong space transportation system, was an orbital transfer vehicle that would move things from one orbit to another, one body to another, and that's where we're going. We're going back to the future. So I think what they're saying today is really important.
You've already mentioned at least a couple, maybe more, of things that happened during your tenure as administrator. Yeah. And a lot of these are continuing. Cuts, commercial crew.
I tell everybody, don't let that secret out. one of the phrases that we coined, and it wasn't mine, it was Joe Dyer, Admiral Joe Dyer, who chaired my aerospace safety advisory panel for the bulk of my time as the NASA administrator. In his annual report to Congress and to the president, would always start with a phrase that NASA needs constancy of purpose.
Continuity.
Exactly. And I was just beaming when I heard the vice president at a recent Space Council meeting use the term constancy of purpose. Whether they know it or not, whether they intended to or not, the Trump administration is continuing essentially on the path that we had charted. 10 years in lunar orbit was the plan all along because we're not ready to go. I know some people think we're ready to go right now, but I think we need a short break. In lunar orbit and maybe on the surface.
Three days away instead of 8 months away.
You know, the moon is not mandatory to get to Mars. It's not mandatory for Mars. We're not going to learn that much that's relative to Mars by going back to the lunar surface. But it's always good. The more data you can get, the more information you can get, great. I'm personally ready to go on to Mars, but I'm easy. You know, I just, as long as we keep moving the ball down the field, and I think that's what we're doing right now.
There may be some big changes in people who, you know, live and work in the Capitol. What would you hope will happen if we see a big change?
My hope would be that there will be no big change in terms of people's interest and attention to efforts of exploring beyond low Earth orbit, that will continue as it has done from Bush 41 through Clinton, through Bush 43, through Obama, and now into Trump. It's a bumpy road. But we've been on a road that continues to move forward, trying to get humans deeper and deeper into our solar system. One of the things I would hope people will do, particularly because they're finding out the incredible impact that the ordinary citizen has when they get in the street and when they get in the halls of Congress and when they get their voices heard, it's really important for people to start asking questions about space exploration, asking questions about what's the U.S.'s role? Are we going to continue to be the leader as everybody says we want to be, or are we going to cede that leadership to somebody else like China or some other smaller nation? Industry is not going to take over the role of leadership in space exploration. As somebody in the conference today said, if there's no money there, if there's no evidence that there's money there, they ain't going. So we've got to blaze the trail. People like you and me and Bill, the disciples who go out and beat the bushes and try to get people fired up about what we believe can really happen. You know, that's our job. And we need for more people to ask the critical questions, whether they like it or not. If they're opposed to it, I love getting questions from young people about why do we spend all this money in space when there's so many things to be done down here? Because it gives me an opportunity to remind people we don't spend a dime in space. No money is spent in space. It's all spent here on Earth to try to give us the capability to get there. And we're not looking for an alternative to Earth. We're looking to understand our own planet much better. And the farther we can go and look at things that happen there that may very well happen here on Earth, where we're not doing very well right now anyway. I understand what they're talking about, but we can use what we discover on some of these other planets and other solar bodies to help us keep this planet wholesome and healthy.
That's astronaut and retired NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden. More in a minute here on Planetary Radio.
Planetary Society CEO Bill Nye here. Want to defend Earth from killer asteroids, explore strange new worlds, seek life across the cosmos? Well, so do we. These are the core enterprises of the Planetary Society. Your support will power all of these efforts. There's no better time to give than right now while we have a $50,000 match to reach before the end of the year. You can learn more by visiting us at planetary.org/planetaryfund. Thank you!
Hi, this is Emily Lakdawalla. There's no bigger gift than the cosmos. You can share your passion for space exploration by giving someone a gift membership in the Planetary Society this holiday season or any time of year. Your friend or loved one will join us as we nurture new and exciting science, advocate for space, and educate the world. You can learn more at planetary.org/givespace. That's planetary.org/givespace.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan, back with more of my recent conversation with the former leader of NASA, Charles Charlie Bolden. By the way, There's much more of my coverage of the Space Settlement Summit from the National Space Society in the podcast version of this week's show. You'll find it at planetary.org/radio.
A whole bunch of people in this room, they're thinking way beyond lunar gateways. They're even thinking beyond, you know, just getting people to Mars and back.
That's what's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we just saw a guy making a presentation, diagrams of a space station that would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. Artificial gravity, farms, things like that. Do you get excited about stuff like that?
I do. I get excited about it. I know I will not see it in my lifetime. And I try not to be frustrated because I know what we can do, and I know what we should have done by now, but that's water under the bridge. So we've got to stay focused and try to just keep informing the American and international public, because I tell you, I travel around the world a lot still, and people outside the U.S., they're really hot and high on all that we're doing. Young people.
You mentioned my boss, Bill. Yeah. He likes to say, among other things, space brings out the best of us and brings us together.
Yeah, always. I always show a picture of the International Space Station, and I find it somewhat hilarious because as we're in this settlement conference, no one seems to understand that we have been in a settlement off this planet now for almost 20 years. That station dwarfs the amount of time that humanity has spent off this planet compared to what we did on the surface of the moon. Now, yes, we need to get back, but we've got almost 20 years of experience in a settlement that is not here on the planet, and we need to continue that and to learn from it, but keep moving on out so that we get back in a gravity environment for the, you know, for the next settlements.
Yesterday at dinner right here, guy used to work for you, George Whitesides, he got a lot of good questions afterwards. Somebody asked him, what should groups like the sponsor of this, National Space Society, Planetary Society for that matter, what should we do over the next year or two? And he looked around the room and he saw the makeup of this room and he said, well, you need to diversify and youngify. He invented a word. NASA's made some strides. Did that under you? Is that, I think I know the answer to this, important goal?
It's a critical goal. If we want to be the best in the world, we have to bring the best in the world in to be with us. And anybody who thinks that you can eliminate, if we talk about gender diversity, anybody who thinks you can eliminate more than 50% of the population and be the best is crazy, to be quite honest. Anybody who thinks you can eliminate people who don't look like us or think like us, that's a recipe for disaster. We've got to diversify our workforce. We've got to diversify our thought. And be open. I always talk about diversity and inclusion. And the inclusion is the critical part because that says a disparate voice that doesn't agree with anybody, that has one of these wild and crazy ideas, like some of the people in this room. If we don't listen to them, this is the first time I've ever been anywhere where, as a young man said down there, how about, somebody from Starbucks, somebody from, some hotel chain or something.
Hilton
like that.
Or, yeah, right.
I've never been in a conference where anybody's talked about that before. Yeah. You know, are they going to be able to build a chain of hotels on the surface of the moon or somewhere else? Probably not. But at least we should hear that voice and understand what we need to do if that's going to be something that's viable. And we're not even having that discussion. So I agree strongly with what they said. Add diversity to the discussion that we're having, even the crazy, seemingly impossible stuff, because we're doing stuff every single day today that 20 years ago people thought was crazy and impossible. So bring it on.
Which do you miss more, flying into space or running NASA?
Neither. I miss more when you talk about what do you miss more? I'm blessed. I have my incredible family, my son, daughter, three granddaughters, and my wife all within 45 minutes of each other because we all live in the Washington, D.C. area. So that's perfect. I can't ask for anything better than that. But next to that, my next first family is the Marine Corps. And I really miss Marines. I cry when I start thinking about it. This is the week for the Marine Corps birthday coming up. It's a very emotional time because I spent 34 years of my life in the Marine Corps with people who really do believe you can change the world. And I think it's all timely because, you know, we've got, it already have happened when this is aired, but we've got one of the most critical days in our country, Election Day coming up. And people need to understand that's what makes us different. Almost every other country in the world, people have to fight to get out there and do that kind of stuff, and they vote at their own peril. That's a right we have here. Now people try to take it away now and then, but it's a very important day, and we should keep that in mind.
On behalf of my brother, who's a Marine vet and a pilot, sir, Semper Fi, sir.
Thank you very much. And I know this may be aired after the birthday, but to all the Marines out there, wherever you are, all over the world, a lot of whom want to be a part of this space generation, Semper Fi. I loved every second I was with you on active duty, and you're what I miss probably more than anything else. Yeah.
Be careful on that motorcycle, sir.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you,
former NASA Administrator, Shuttle Astronaut, and Marine Corps Pilot, Charlie Bolden. Time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. So Bruce Betts, who is the Chief Scientist for the Planetary Society, has once again joined us online to tell us about the night sky and much more. Our contest is ahead of us, both answering one and providing another. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back. We got Mars. I check it out nearly every night because it's still quite lovely. Pretty high in the south, looking reddish and bright. Not extremely bright like it used to be, but still looking bright. And if you're picking this up soon after it came out, you can also see the moon next to it on December 14th. But the pre-dawn is where the party is, the planetary party. You got Venus just looking super, super bright, as Venus has wont to do. And to its lower left, you can pick up Mercury. And now Jupiter is starting to come up very low in the east. This is all in the east, shortly before dawn. Jupiter coming up looking bright, much brighter than Mercury, but much less bright than Venus, and the whole gang's there. Mercury is going to hang around for a few days and then go away, being all Mercurian. But Jupiter will start creeping up and approaching Venus in the sky. It'll be lovely, Matt.
I have no doubt, and thank you for sharing that with us.
All right, we move on to this week in space history. It was 1962. Mariner 2 did the first ever planetary flyby, flying by Venus. And kind of amazing to me, 10 years later this week, we had not only sent humans to the moon, but the last steps, the last people on the moon were stepping off the moon and leaving the moon in 1972 this week.
Wow. Okay. So the end of Apollo 17, huh?
Indeedy-do.
Yeah. That is a lot of progress. We were moving fast in those days. Still getting good work done, though.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of great work. So I hear you've got something special.
Okay, here it is, and I don't think he knows at this point who it is, folks. So
I have no idea.
All right, here it comes.
Hey, Bruce, this is Charlie Bolden, the former NASA administrator and erstwhile astronaut of used to be. You got a random space fact for me? Say, tell me something I don't know.
Well, that's spectacular. Way to get Charlie Bolden. First, the little-known Charlie Bolden fact, after he was an astronaut, but before he was a NASA administrator, he and I hung out on a drizzly day giving talks at Legoland.
Really?
It stuck in my mind. I'm guessing it didn't, I may not have made a big impression on him, but made a big impression on me. Well, that's really cool. I will tell him something that he may not know. As seen from Earth, and due to changes in the distance between their orbits, Uranus can sometimes have a larger angular diameter than Mars. Mars varies so much that when Mars is at its farthest point, being significantly smaller than Uranus, it actually has a smaller angular diameter than Uranus when we're seeing it at its largest.
That just sounds insane, or crazily elliptical at least.
It's crazy, I tell you, crazy. I was surprised, which is why I shared it.
Yeah, that surprises me quite a bit. All right, good one. I'm sure Charlie will be pleased.
On to the trivia contest. I asked you, what do the InSight lander and some warriors from the Middle Ages have in common? How'd we do, Matt?
So many interesting answers to this one, many of which were not what I think you were looking for, but were pretty good answers. Nicole Dawn in North Mankato, Minnesota, she says she's a male artisan. That is not male as in male person, but a chainmail artisan, so she was pretty excited that a vendor that she purchases supplies from has scales in space. It's chainmail.
Wow, that is correct, and pretty exciting to have a, what was the right term? Mail?
A mail artisan, M-A-I-L-L-E.
Cool. Yeah, chainmail. Oddly enough, they produce some basically chainmail that they use on the base of the wind cover that goes over the seismometer and cuts down on thermal issues, but also cuts down on wind having any chance of shaking the seismometer. And because they weren't sure exactly how rough the surface would be, they put a chainmail combined with Mylar on the base of the cover.
Absolutely brilliant solution. Congratulations, Nicole. I took a look at her website, and she's got some beautiful work out there. Clothing made of metal, basically. It's really fun. She is going to get a Planetary Society t-shirt. I'm afraid it's only made of cotton from the Chop Shop store. That's where the Planetary Society store is, at chopshopstore.com, and a 200-point itelescope.net astronomy account. She can try to find that chainmail on the surface of the red planet. I don't hold out much hope.
Our t-shirt, I should note, can be worn over or under chainmail. I'm pretty sure.
I will give it a shot. Although, I don't know. It seems like the chainmail would kind of catch on chest hair. So I'll think maybe I'll wear the chainmail on the outside.
Gosh, that was an image I didn't want. All right. As seen from Earth, we're back to angular diameter here. As seen from Earth, what extrasolar star has the largest apparent size in the sky as seen from Earth? In other words, angular diameter. So not the sun, but what other star has the largest apparent size? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
Isn't that fun? I mean, I've mentioned on the show before that when I was a kid, we were always told that stars other than our sun would only ever be seen as a point of light. And now we can compare how much of the sky they take up. It's fascinating. We live in a great age. But what you want to hear is the deadline for this one. And that would be the 19th, December 19th at 8 a.m. Pacific time that you can get those answers in. And you want to hear even more what the prizes are going to be. Guess what? We have a second set of the National Geographic Space Atlas, Mapping the Universe and Beyond. It is a huge coffee table book done in the beautiful design fashion that National Geographic is so well known for. And, but wait, there's more. The Almanac, the National Geographic Almanac 2019. So you can put one of these on the table in the living room, and the other one would be just perfect for the bathroom. So anyway, that's what the winner this time around is going to receive. And of course, you can check these out at the National Geographic site. And that's it.
All right, everybody. I think you need a break after all these years. So everybody go out there, look up the night sky and think about nothing. Thank you. Good night. And good luck.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Just try not to think about dark matter, okay? He's Bruce Betts. He's the chief scientist for the Planetary Society, who joins us every week here for What's Up. I thank the National Space Society for allowing me to attend its Space Settlement Summit. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its spacefaring members. Mary Liz Bender is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan, Ad Astra.